Welcome to the Showbiz Podcast with Robert Rabaya and Joey Coley-Sowry.
This week's guest, Ryan Hayden.
From across the Pacific Ocean, this is part two of our two-part American special. In this episode, we speak with Hollywood acting agent Ryan Hayden, who is the founder and owner of Ideal Talent Agency. Ryan cut his teeth in the actor-agent business at the world-renowned ICM, assisting and representing actors including Taylor Lautner, Michelle Rodriguez, January Jones, Danny Glover, Tom Arnold, Angelica Houston, and Alex O'Loughlin, to name but a few. Hayden's talent was refined further as a casting director for MTV, a casting assistant at MGM under Paul Weber, as well as working in politics with notable figures such as Al Gore and Bill Clinton. Ryan Hayden from Ideal Talent Agency took some time out to join us on the Showbiz Podcast. Can you tell us about you and your agency, Ideal Talent Agency, and how that came about? I believe you originally worked at ICM.
Sure. Well, Ideal Talent Agency was founded in 2010, so we've had about 10 years we've been in business now. Over that time, we've become known as one of the top boutique agencies in Los Angeles and sort of a powerhouse hitting well above our weight class compared to all the major agencies, because we basically vie with them for all sorts of major roles throughout the year and have had clients who are celebrity and star name clients and really have developed a number of people from scratch over the time we've been in business. I had started at ICM. That's where I sort of cut my teeth and learned the agency business. I was there for 2 years. And then in terms of how we were founded, Ideal was founded basically after the Great Recession, because I had left ICM to go ahead and pursue a new media company. And right around then is when the venture capital market fell apart. So that was not the best time to be in Series A new media companies trying to get financed. So with that, I ended up deciding to go back to agenting and gave it a go of starting up my own company. And since then, we've gone ahead and put tons of people into shows and continue to have great success. I know that this month we've had pretty much two bookings every day on either television or film, and significant bookings as well. You know, people are testing and we're having people on series. And so it's been a quite a ride over all these years.
Some agents work really hard, especially during pilot season, and you certainly are one of those agents whose work ethic is second to none. Can you give us some insights, especially for our Australian listeners in the entertainment industry, what a day or a week is like for you during pilot season?
Well, thank you for the kind words about my work ethic. I know I work particularly hard, and everyone has to work particularly hard during pilot season. Pilot season is a very, very busy time because you have what is all of the major networks releasing something like 30 pilots during pilot season. So with that, you know, combined, at some points I'm tracking up to 150 different pilots. And that's in addition to the general workload that goes along with episodic season. So to do that, it's a monumental undertaking. Our whole office is on alert and is working extra hours and extra hard. One of the big jobs is just tracking the pilots. We have somebody on staff. Usually we have low man on the totem pole whose job is just to maintain a book of all the pilots. So, you know, any agent who's worth their weight in salt is going to go ahead and work particularly hard during pilot season just because of how much is going on and really what the stakes are. I mean, one pilot at the very lowest amount that you'd get on a pilot would be maybe 12,000 an episode would be the absolute lowest that you would negotiate. But generally speaking, somebody without a pre-existing quote, meaning they haven't done a pilot before and don't have any track record of getting paid, you know, anything but prior to this. So this is their first pilot they're getting. Usually they're looking at a rate of between $20,000 and $25,000 an episode. Now, why you can estimate that is that all of this stuff works off of precedents at companies. And so, you know, let's say I'm dealing with Warner Studios on a negotiation. Well, they have certain amounts that they're willing to pay somebody who it is their first pilot, and they try to stay within those boundaries. Now, that said, you can always negotiate for even more. Sometimes you're pushing your luck a little bit. But that said, eventually as you build somebody's credits, once they get to their second, third, fourth series, that rate starts going up and up and up. And so, of course, eventually your rates will reflect your star value and just how much you bring to the table. Now, in terms of giving your Australian listeners a little bit of a sneak peek of what pilot season consists of, it is all day long work and all day long making calls. Part of it is just figuring out what casting directors are reading on when, what roles are active, because generally speaking, they start with the biggest roles or the roles that are the ones that are they're going to cast first because they're necessary to the plot and necessary to matching off of different people. So once those roles get cast, then another set of roles sort of come up next. So let's say there's a project with a little brother, like they'll take Malcolm in the Middle. Oftentimes, the little brother is the most important. So they'll spend 2 weeks on the little brother. Then next thing you know, they have to match the parents off of. So now that they know who their kid is, they're going to match parents who roughly look like they could be his actual parents. So that might be the second thing that they end up casting. Then after that, they'll have to figure out the brothers. So partly what my job is during pilot season is just tracking what's being read when. And that's a big part of the job of doing what's called coverage. So once you have coverage done and you know exactly what's reading when, part of on the same phone call a lot of times, or sometimes through follow-up emails and then another phone call, you start going ahead and giving ideas that really match. And you always want to make sure those ideas fit the tone of the role. It's not enough just to be like, okay, this role is this age. You really got to get to the nitty-gritty specifics, especially with a series regular where there's so much material written, to know exactly what that tone is and whether that's in somebody's range. So a lot of times when I first have a conversation, I may not have all the details about that tone right there in front of me, or really want to mull it a little bit more. And I think casting directors appreciate the fact that we put a lot of thought as an agency into who really is right and why. And we're not just pitching things haphazardly, which some companies do. There's sort of a spaghetti at the wall on the wall approach that some agencies have towards everything they do. Now, in terms of being somebody from Australia coming to LA for their first pilot season, let's say, that is always a challenge, because during pilot season, these casting offices do not have nearly the amount of time that they have during other times of the year, where they're just not having to have as much pressure and seeing as many roles. I mean, just any pilot audition, usually the number of pages of sides is going to be 6 pages to 10 pages a lot of times. So when you figure that out, a page a minute works out to being, 6 to 10 minutes per audition minimum. And if they give a redirect, sometimes double that. So when you have series regulars that you're reading, sometimes you can only read, 4 or 5 people an hour. So when you're actually setting up those sessions, you're limited by the amount of people you can read per hour and number of hours you're going to work. So with that being the case, more often than not, a lot of the casting directors aren't wanting to see brand new talent to the talent market. Obviously, you're only as good as your agent. We get plenty of people in who these casting directors have never seen before, and have booked people on series who the casting directors have never seen before that time they booked them in the series. But that said, it is harder when you're walking in there without the relationship and when they're on that much of a time crunch. And a lot of these offices are going ahead and casting multiple pilots. They might be casting 2 or 3 pilots, because in order to make sure that they have a series in the upcoming year, they would rather take their chances by casting multiple pilots than just putting all their eggs in one basket in case that pilot doesn't get picked up. So with that being the case, I tend to recommend for people to come sometime before pilot season, really come in episodic season, where there's a lot of auditions to go around, where you can familiarize yourself with more of the casting directors and they can familiarize themselves with you. And at that point, once you've laid that groundwork, you'll have a more successful pilot season, I tend to find. But I know there's still this thought that you can just come to LA during pilot season. Some of that is residual from an era in which pilots cast over a longer period. They would cast over a 3-month period, and casting directors would use that time to stock their file cabinets with headshots and pictures and actually get to see as many actors as they could during that time. That's no longer the case. They're under the gun to cast their pilots fast. They're under the gun to cast their pilots with big names. They're under the gun to go ahead and listen to the network and what approved actors on that network approval list sometimes. So it's not as easy as people think that you can just come during pilot season and have a wonderful pilot season. I've had a number of people who have wonderful pilot seasons, but I've also had people who have been disappointed because of the fact that every role that they were really right for ended up going to an offer at this point. And in certain categories, you can almost assume that the offers are ubiquitous and it's they're not reading almost anyone for some of those roles. So, and I mean, we had that last year where we had clients who were super right for a role. As a matter of fact, one of them went ahead and read for the casting director, went to producers, and all of a sudden the audition was pulled out from under him because they suddenly put out an offer even though they were intending to test him. So those are things that do happen, and you know, you're sort of at the mercy of the way test sessions run.
How do you work with your actors to get them in the room to be seen?
There's no one way to really get people seen. It's kind of a combination of different things that we do and different strategies we employ depending on where people are at in their career, what we're working with. You know, you kind of deal with the cards you're dealt. Obviously, for actors, you want to make sure to have the best materials possible to make it so that we're playing a stronger hand when we go to pitch you to casting directors. What we tend to do is we tend to do an email pitch first, followed by a phone call to follow up on that email, because then they already can say that they have all the material, the blurb that we will use, which we always write sort of a couple sentence bio on an actor, basically saying what somebody has done lately, why they're hot, what makes them somebody worth seeing. In addition to that, we'll include something about the character. So if the character is a particular type, we might say why they fit that role both physically or tone-wise or whatever it might be. So once we follow up with a call, we often have a discussion about it that much more, kind of push that much more. Sometimes they'll go ahead and call our actors in right off the email. And we just get people in however we can by, you know, pushing repetition, making lots of calls. That said, that's not the only element of getting people seen. There's sometimes where we're going straight for the offer. And we've done that on a number of occasions where strategically we realized that somebody was well positioned to get the straight offer. They had really strong reels illustrative of what they could do and illustrative that they can handle that particular role or fit that particular role. And in addition to that, just we were able to strategically position people, because you're not just calling casting directors, you're also calling directors and producers as well in certain cases. It kind of depends on where an actor is in their career, though, because if somebody's new, pretty much the job of the casting director is to get new ideas and ideas that are less well known. At least that's what they tend to see a little bit more in sessions. They also put together lists of actors that they find to be, you know, bigger stars that they might put an offer out to. They have usually a discussion about each role before they do anything with the casting process. Well, sometimes they'll release the breakdown, then have the discussion. So, you know, when it comes to getting seen, there's, as I said, there's no one way. What you can do as an actor, materials are so important. And also, for that matter, creating things yourself. I mean, whether it's creating content, which isn't the easiest thing. I know a lot of agents like to say, go create your own content, but you know, it's got to hopefully be good content, and it's got to be content ideally that gets seen and that actually makes some noise out there in the marketplace. But any content can be helpful just in terms of building and constructing a reel. Other things that are very important is also just that you're taking classes, and there's things that I can say about where, if somebody's brand new to the industry, I'm wanting to say about where they're studying, who they're working with, why they are worth seeing despite the credits sometimes. We represent all levels of actors. You know, there's a wide spectrum of types within our roster. You know, we have brand new actors who are some of our kid actors, and then, you know, also some of our early 20s actors are fairly new to the industry. They may not have any appreciable credits. And what we're really looking to do there is to pitch them based on where they've studied, what work they've done up to that point. Then, you know, we have actors who are major celebrities who we can tout their Academy Award nomination and be able to explain why they're the best choice, why in the pecking order they should be their first choice rather than another actor who was also a big name. So a lot of that angling is also important. And that's, you know, so you're not just getting people in for the audition. Your end goal is to get them into the role itself. If you're not able to get somebody into the role, that's, you're not doing your job as an agent. And the best agents don't just settle for submitting and getting auditions. They're really going for the auditions, getting the role. That's really the job that, you know, agenting really involves. So with that, I think that it's really imperative to know where you're at in this pecking order, and realize too that one of the aspects of getting people seen is having developed those relationships and consistently doing a great job when you go in and read for somebody. Because if they ever see bad work, if you go in, and everyone has an audition that may go awry, they might have made a really strong choice that was really wrong for the role, or just that day they weren't on. That does happen to any actor. Very few actors are consistent to the point where they never have given a bad audition in, you know, 20 auditions or something like that. Fact is, bad auditions happen, but they can't happen consistently. You have to have consistency in going in and being a great actor, because that builds your name, that builds the rapport with the casting director. And that rapport is what gets people in more and more. Once the casting director is a fan, getting them in again and again, and also for that matter, getting the casting director to go to bat that they can get the offer, those are the elements that provide longevity to a career and really make a career get heat to it. The first months that I'm working for most actors, they tend to go out a lot less, unless they've already done the entire circuit and all the casting directors know them. But usually I'm in the process of building additional relationships, making sure that new casting directors who weren't fans before become fans. And that's a critical part of this process. For that matter, another thing you can do if you're not repped by an agent is be out there and consistently be networking at high quality functions. So film festivals are an amazing opportunity to meet casting directors, directors, because many of them are going there to tout their films. They want to see it for the first time. Obviously, certain film festivals are more accessible than others. And if it's an Australian film that's premiering at an Australian film festival, the chances that the Australian casting director and the Australian director will show up is much higher than if it was a film that shot in Germany with a German director, because of just flying out and everything else for film festivals. And also, major film festivals are more people will show up to. If a film ends up in Sundance, a lot of times the casting director will also fly out to Sundance, not just the director, because they want to go ahead and do their own networking, frankly. So all of those things are critical elements to being seen. But there's so many ways to go ahead and solve this solution. There's so many different strategies that we utilize that to say there's any one thing is really tough. Sometimes it is a real situation of beg, borrow, and steal to get people opportunities. And we're willing to go that extra mile to really push. I mean, not steal, but really push to get people any opportunity they have, and maybe steal a role away from somebody who was a bigger name and suddenly our client stole the role from them in that sense. But it's that's the name of the game, is just continually getting in and having opportunities. One thing to remember, and I always say, if you make a fan with just one casting director a year, this is obviously you want to make fans with more casting directors a year, but take an actor who just through networking, they don't have any agent, only meets one casting director a year who then ends up bringing them in. If you do an exceptional job, that casting director is going to bring you in again. And if you replicate that year after year, where you're only meeting one casting director, we're just talking like a bare minimum situation, all of a sudden, year two, you'll have two casting directors. Year three, you'll have three casting directors. And this is all predicated on you giving incredible auditions and making fans every time you go in. So now you have three casting directors who are consistently calling you in for projects. Now, an interesting thing happens next is that those casting directors' assistants often start becoming casting directors in and of themselves. So it starts becoming almost exponential at that point. But it's all predicated on you going ahead and making fans every time you go in. And I think the biggest problem with actors is that they don't really understand how good they have to be to book and how excellent they have to be to consistently impress casting directors who are seeing in any given year 10,000 actors or more sometimes in audition situations. And so to be the memorable one and the one that they continually go to, you have to stand out. And the only way to do that is being as expert at your craft as possible. Everything I say today, the most important thing is to be an expert at your craft. Craft should always come first. Networking and all those other things are secondary to really being able to deliver when you get the opportunities. So that's the longer answer of how to get people seen and how you can get yourself seen, frankly.
Any advice for Australian actors coming over to Hollywood?
Advice for Australian actors coming over to Hollywood. Wow, I could go on this subject forever because having been an LA native and knowing all of the horror stories of people moving here and having, I mean, some people have wonderful experiences right off the bat, but there's so many pitfalls to when you're moving just to any new city, but particularly Los Angeles is not the easiest city to sort of navigate, figure out, get around in, and really to develop your own sort of circle of actors that you're working with and creative minds that you're collaborating with and, you know, finding the scene in this town that really fits you. All of those things have certain complexities to Hollywood. But I think the first thing that you have to go over whenever you're talking about Australian actors coming to Hollywood is the issue of visas, because that can make or break and very quickly end a career when you're trying to get into entertainment in the United States. The primary visa that most people apply for is the O-1 visa, which is a Immigrant of Extraordinary Ability visa. So you have to basically show that you have extraordinary abilities in the arts, generally speaking, in acting. There are certain visa restrictions on that, though, which one of the restrictions is that it helps if your visa is sponsored by a licensed talent agency, because if it's sponsored by a production company or a non-licensed entity that isn't licensed to basically find work on your behalf, there will be certain stipulations on it and certain possible restrictions. And some of the studios will not accept an O-1 visa that isn't sponsored by their by the talent agency of that person, or at least a licensed talent agency. There have been situations where I've had an Australian client that I stopped working with, but we were still the licensed agency on their visa, and we were fine with going ahead and being the agency of record whenever there was a project that involved that visa without charging commission and that sort of thing. But one of the problems now, though, with the O-1 visa, and also just with the American immigration system in general, I mean, obviously, we've had a bit of a crazy administration when it comes to immigration and crackdowns on immigration, and there being not a firm policy direction that's going on with our government, because it's not functioning quite right because of a certain man named Trump. But with that, that's actually leading to some problems for actors, because of the fact is some of the networks aren't taking it for granted that visas are going to be enforced the same way that they always have been. They're finding there to be certain randomness, and they're having certain fears about certain visas. And so there's a little bit more hesitancy to accept certain visas. Now, I know there's multiple and this goes even before Trump, but there were multiple companies that have an issue with the O-1 visa because they feel that having an outside sponsor doesn't qualify you necessarily to work for their production. There's a long legal issue there in terms of discussions of what's right, what's wrong, whether that's actually the case. But what you all you have to know as a somebody who might be on an O-1 visa is that about a fourth of the production companies and studios and networks will not accept the O-1 visa. So about 25% of all the roles that you might be eligible for wouldn't be able to go your way if you had an O-1 visa. Plus, there's also the process of reviewing that. So visa issues are a major concern and a major problem for a lot of actors. And I've had actors from other countries who that was a stumbling block on a number of occasions, both in terms of what work restrictions might be on their visa, the length of time of their visa. You obviously have to renew visas. All of these things enter the equation that make moving to Los Angeles a little bit more complicated. The best thing of all is if you can go ahead and end up on a green card. I know that there's a lottery system. I know that there's various ways to get a green card. You'll have to look up all of them, but green card tends to be, it's accepted by everyone. And that's the primary thing that you eventually want to get on if you want to be working consistently in the US market. So that said, if you don't have a visa and you are a Australian citizen coming to the United States to do a role, it has to be a role that gives them enough lead time to get a visa and apply for that visa and secure it, et cetera. And that can take up to at least a month. Usually the lead time they're wanting is 2 months. Some of the actors that I work with who are, let's say, Australian citizens who may have a visa that's expired or don't have a visa that's in lawful work visa in place, we'll still work with occasionally because you can still book things that are going on in Canada and other countries, of course. We also obviously deal with Australia from time to time as well. We don't cover Australia as much as a agency that would be based in Australia does, but most of the major roles that are shooting in Australia, we at least are aware of, and some of those we'll go ahead and target both for our clients that are in other countries, but as well as our clients who are in the United States. So, you know, it's that element, I didn't mean to go into that at length as much, but it kind of is one of the most important elephants in the room when it comes to coming to LA. After that, obviously, the keys are to find great acting classes in Los Angeles, find great opportunities to collaborate with people and start going to social events and really building your network once you get here. As I said, that whole conversation can be an hour long of different things I recommend and, you know, Ryan's favorite restaurants and, you know, you name it. But I think that's a good start on the question of what to do if you're an Australian coming to Hollywood.
What inspires you? What makes you want to get up and go to work for your clients?
What inspires me? God, there's so many things that I could say. I think the primary thing as an agent is waking up every day and knowing that you can change somebody's life. That's one of the most special things about it all, is that at any moment, I could get somebody that opportunity that completely changes the trajectory of their career, completely changes every aspect of their life as it goes. So that in itself is something that you have to be particularly passionate about. Also just working for people that you really care about. When I think of all of my clients and just how much we've all, you know, I've gone through with many of them. I mean, we've had ups and downs and, you know, calls in which I would basically be their cheerleader and therapist sometimes. And with that, you really do feel this kinship with people. And so every day when I'm waking up, a lot of times it's something hyper specific. It's, God, I want to really get in the office so I can make that one call to make sure they, you know, that this thing goes our way or whatever it might be. So, I mean, really it's that thrill of the hunt that is part of it. It's the, you know, going for the big wins. But at the end of the day, why that's all important is because you really want to see your clients succeed and you really want to make dreams come true.
Howard Fine recently branched out into the Australian market. Have you ever thought about setting up shop down under?
Oh, Howard Fine is now going to be in Australia? He's a fantastic teacher. He's actually one of my favorite teachers of all to recommend. I don't know. I always worry a little bit when people branch out because, and I guess that's one of the reasons why we haven't branched out to many places yet, is because it's hard to have that quality control across multiple locations. I mean, this is the problem of franchising anything or setting up any business that, you know, you don't have direct control over. So that being said, I'm certainly not against us setting up a shop in Australia at some point. I know that it's probably down our list of territories that we intend to go after next. I would probably first go with a office in New York and then, you know, potentially Toronto. But after that, I mean, truth be told, one of the things that's really nice is that the time difference to Australia works more with my schedule than the time difference in London. because London, their 3 o'clock is like our middle of the night. They're 8 hours ahead. Whereas with Australia, it's the opposite, where, you know, I tend to be a night owl, and so I'm able to catch people and stay in the office late. So I'm able to catch people right when their day's really starting and things are going on. So, I mean, I certainly have considered something, you know, eventually branching out. But I think right now building internally as a company is what we're going to be doing next. And even then, I think our next hire is probably going to be either another theatrical talent agent as well, or a full-time literary agent. And so those are sort of on the agenda for our company coming into the future. But I will say this, the scouting that can be done in Australia, I mean, there's so many great actors come out of Australia that we've considered figuring out different client sharing arrangements or deals that we could do, just to really tap into the market and tap into all the talent base that's there.
We know you're a busy man, so we'll make it quick. A little while back, we read in Deadline and Backstage that one of your pet peeves is being hounded by actors during pilot season, unless they're calling you about a series regular role or a major film role. In fact, you said you would drop them. True or false?
Oh man, I will never live that particular email chain down. Just to give some backstory of what happened, I had a week where a number of my clients completely ignored two really nicely worded emails about it being pilot season, in the middle of pilot season, please make sure to, you know, limit your calls to times that are outside of the peak hours to reach casting directors in the offices, because any call that I would get then would essentially be at the expense of a call going out that would be really important. And a number of my clients completely decided to ignore this fact. So what happened was I sent out an email, and that didn't even go to all of my clients. It went to something like, I think, like 20 clients that I sent it to, half of which I sent it to simply because I thought they would find it funny, because they would get the humor of me coming down that hard about something, of saying, I will drop you if you go ahead and call me during this time, or if you know, ask me. Specifically, I said, if you ask me to pitch you on a co-star, I will drop you. Because also during the middle of pilot season, the last thing that any casting director wants to deal with is getting pitched on a co-star. That's the lowest, no, I wouldn't say hanging fruit isn't the word I want to use. It's the lowest rung of the totem pole of priorities that they have, is dealing with their one-liners when they have the lead of a series that they have to get cast within that week. I mean, the last thing they want to do is take a call about a one-liner. So my point to my clients was simply, look, if you're calling me repetitively about certain small roles, I will drop you, because there's bigger fish to fry during this time of year. And yeah, I mean, in that sense, was that true? Well, to the 20 that I had sent it to, the 10 that actually it was meant for, because they were they consistently ignored things and ignored two other emails, yeah, I possibly would have dropped them if they went ahead and asked me again. And in fact, funny story with that, somebody that it was meant for then did call me and ask me to go ahead and pitch on a co-star, even after not reading the trades, because the email got leaked because it was so popular, because there was actually a bit of a tongue-in-cheek element and a funniness to it. And also it was so impassioned that like a lot of people went ahead and gravitated towards it. So one of my clients just still didn't read their email from me and didn't realize that had gotten posted out there publicly, and called me about pitching on a co-star, and I did drop them for all of like 6 hours. And then my client called me again crying, and I'm such a softy, I took them back. So I don't think I've ever told that part of the story before, but that was, so in that sense, was it true? Yes, it was true. Was it false? You know, partly. Did I really want to be in that situation of dropping somebody should they reach out to me in the middle of pilot season like that? No, I didn't, but I also didn't want to be in a situation where it was sort of open season and we were getting consistently distracted either, so... That's a little bit of it. And then the other thing I should add is just a funny part of the story, was the day that article got published, I had no knowledge that it was going to, that it got leaked to Nikki Fink and that they were going to run it as the lead story in Deadline as sort of this, you know, slice of life, here's a Hollywood interest story. But the title of it was Why Actors Hate Their Agents During Pilot Season. And so I literally had just clicked on the article and saw it and my jaw drops when I get a knock on the door and I go out and I'm like, at this point, I'm so discombobulated because all of a sudden I'm like, oh crap, this email has been read by a million people and what, let me make sure I didn't spell anything correctly. I think I had one grammar error in the entire email, which, you know, still mortifies me to this day. Anyways, so I then go ahead and open the door and sure enough, who's there but somebody with an entire gift basket. And I open up the card and it says, to the best agent ever, thank you so much for all you're doing for me. And it was one of my clients who went ahead and was basically unprompted. They had no idea that this was going to come out, had just sent that to me. So at the same time, I'm having why actors hate their agents during pilot season. Here am I getting a gift basket saying how much somebody loved me and was happy about the job I was doing. So it was a trippy situation. And then the other post log on that is that we actually got more auditions the day that happened than I think I've ever gotten in the entire history of the agency, because so many of the casting directors appreciated the sentiment of that, which was simply that during pilot season, don't concentrate on these five line or less roles. The real thing that everyone needs to be concentrating on is series regulars. And just the fact that that message got out there and told a lot of the other small agencies who don't think that way, that they should start thinking that way. The casting directors gave me a ton of appointments. I think we had 70 appointments the day that happened. So it all worked out in the end and was something I look back on and laugh about and enjoy. But yes, mostly true, I guess, is what I'd say.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
Well, thank you. You know, this has been a lot of fun. Hopefully I'll be able to meet more actors from down under. Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate being able to talk with y'all.
You've been listening to the Showbiz Podcast with Robert Rabaya and Joey Coley-Sowry.